Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Ron Edwards, and this is the Ron and Don Show. Sorry to be about 5 minutes late. We are at a sporting event. Don Allen will not be with us this evening, but want to bring some updated information as it pertains to our community, if you will. In fact, we're here at the lovely Target Center in downtown Minneapolis, if you will. Beautiful night, beautiful day. Minnesota Lynx battling with the New York Liberty of the WNBA. These are difficult times in the city of Minneapolis, the Twin Cities, and the metropolitan area. And we have really been saddened by another homicide and the loss of another precious life, 18-year-old African-American young lady, if you will, Miss Brown. And shot and killed, actually in apparently a gun battle along the 800 block on Queen Avenue North. People in the car with her attempted to take her to the hospital. Unfortunately, that probably wasn't the best of ideas. They called 911. Police met them at a location along the 1800 block on Penn Avenue North here in the city of Minneapolis. A magnificent effort was made by medical personnel at HCMC, that's the Hennepin County Medical Center. Procedures including taking her heart from chest cavity, if you will, massaging, extracting the heart, et cetera, and every effort to save this 19-year-old African-American girl, lady, really a young lady. But we're not able to do it. We have a troubling situation. Of course, it's troubling with any level of violence, death, injury, and et cetera. But we are having far too many females shot, killed, injured here in this city in over the last 5 to 6 months, particularly since the first of the year. We had kind of expected that many of our organizations would say that they are working with and dealing with the female situation, young women, if you will, would speak up, would put some pressure on the rest of us in community to step forward. As we have been reporting faithfully on this program, there is there are two organizations, and specifically we really decided that we must identify them. We're not going to identify the leadership because there's too much plagiarism and et cetera that goes on around here. But two organizations, COI and Urban, the Urban Contemporary Organization, and the leadership of these two organizations have been holding together, working and holding together a truce for the last month. The reason that a consistency of shootings are down in the last month, month and a half. This comes at a time when there's a lot of money that has been allocated, allegedly, supposedly, to deal with the youth problem here in our cities, both our cities, if you will. Example, the YMCA in St. Paul was the recipient of a nice piece of money to deal with the violence, particularly on the east side of St. Paul, amongst African-American youth and et cetera. Here in Minneapolis, we are aware that Emerge has been the beneficiary of $4.5 million in funding to deal with at-risk youth, key word we use up here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and Minneapolis, St. Paul. What is interesting about that is that there were supposed to be a significant number of jobs that were already supposedly in play, in existence. We are aware, as an example, a list was provided to Emerge of approximately 75 young African-Americans who were ready to work They've been in classes, if you will, classes provided by the two organizations that we, on the streets of our cities, we desperately need them to be gainfully not only employed, but to be fully active beyond just quote-unquote anger and violence and et cetera. And so that certainly applies to the situation that is involving our young African-American women. And we become even more concerned when we saw the other night, as we did, as we were called as a part of the Chief Special Community Response Team, to a beautiful 19-year-old African-American young lady who was shot and certainly was to expire, if you will, though at one point upon the arrival of the ambulance, she appeared to be dead, if you will. Paramedics did a heck of a job of bringing her back. They arrived at the hospital, as we said before, extraordinary medical techniques used in an attempt to save her life. Unfortunately, that did not happen. We are still greatly troubled in this community, contrary to what may not be said or written or et cetera. We understand that a $5,000 reward has been put up for information leading to those involved and responsible for the death of this Beeks. Actually, in the same area, if you will, of North Minneapolis, along 10th Avenue, 21, 22, 23, 2400 block, 10th Avenue has become a battleground, if you will. We are not exaggerating examples, if you will. It is a trying time for the African-American community. It is a trying time for leadership, if you will. If we don't say it, if we don't speak to it and address it, then I guess it will not be dealt with in a manner which provides at least some minimal safety, sons and daughters of the African. This, as always, is a very serious program tonight because of the despair that I'm beginning to see in my community. And I've resided in this community, the African-American community of the Twin Cities, since 1945. I'm a 77-year-old African-American, still very active. And yet I'm seeing a level of despair and anger and et cetera that is troubling. I'll give another example because, again, there are organizations that are receiving significant funding and et cetera. A very close friend of mine who is in law enforcement, is a sergeant in the Minneapolis Police Department, highly decorated, et cetera, was invited a couple days ago to address the Freedom School, which is an educational facility operating inside of the Hennepin County Jail. One of the first things that Sergeant Adams noticed upon his arrival was the absence of African-American females participating in the Freedom School. He asked the question why. He was told that, unfortunately, African-American females within the county jail at that particular cause of the nature of violence amongst them and confrontations, injuries, and et cetera. He and others and myself, who are all a part of a federal monitoring group, expressed our concern. We're hoping that we would see some folks stepping up, particularly in the light of the serious increase of injury and death to young African-American women in the city in the, let's say, the last 6 months, and particularly in light of the tragedy as it pertains to Ms. Beeks, killed as she went about her business, was stopped at a stop sign on 10th Avenue North, gunfire erupts, she is killed. We're having far too many of these. At some point, as a community, as adults, as facilitators, as historians, whatever title fits you best, the money, according to the report from the end of the session of the last legislative session. Governor signed into legislation programs, grants, and et cetera, that were to be used to deal with issues of public safety. I use that reference first. Education, employment, training, and et cetera. I, once again, am not sure that what supposedly should be happening, we are a community that is in danger. It also means that we are a community that continues to travel the highway towards extinction. I repeat that phrase again, the highway towards extinction. We seem to be doing everything in the wrong way to drive our community towards a situation in which our very survival as a people and a race is in jeopardy. Of course, this is not confined to the city of Minneapolis, all the metropolitan area, et cetera. It's happening all across America. On these programs a couple of weeks ago, we had an African-American health worker who brought forward some very damning information, very threatening information, threatening in the sense that we are a community and a race of people under siege health-wise, that there are levels of infectious diseases, some of it sexually transmitted, that are threatening the very well-being and the future of an American community. Yet there is silence. Yet allegedly there is financing, funding, that allows for the problem to be addressed. I repeat again, allows for the problem to be addressed. It is not being addressed, not in the manner that guarantees the well-being and the safety of the African-American community. You know, we in Black America had the opportunity, unfortunately, to experience Flint, Michigan. And for those of us who are historians and have been present for a long time, we still remember Tuskegee and the syphilis experiments of the 1930s. And we're also aware of other kinds of experiments, medical in nature, that have been directed against the African-American community. By the way, associates have asked me to indicate that there is a current epidemic of a drug that has emerged within the African-American community that is taking a very serious toll on African-Americans of every gender. It is a drug that induces even greater anger, if you will, which raises serious questions about the intent and what is being done by the government to deal with this infectious disease. At one point, about a year and a half ago, the sheriff of Hennepin County, Richard Stanek, had attempted to alert people the heroin overdoses and et cetera that were taking place. This current drug that has become a instant killer in our community is well known by health officials. We'd like to suggest on tonight's program that the specific question be asked of the Minneapolis Health Department and the State of Minnesota Health Department about some of these infectious diseases that are running rampant through our community are a significant target. Is it a situation that medically cannot be handled, or is it a situation in which people don't wish to handle it so long as it continues to represent a threat to the African-American community? Now, we know that a couple years ago, that was some of the thinking as pertained to the drug heroin, until young and old Caucasians started succumbing, quote-unquote, to the deadliness of heroin, oftentimes heroin that has been laced with other kinds of drugs, some of them over-the-counter drugs, but improperly, or in this case, improperly mixed with heroin and et cetera, basically instant death. This current drug, which apparently some say comes from Karachi, Pakistan, called Wawa has raised its ugly head, and is causing serious questions within the health service community to be raised, but yet they are not talking to the African-American community who disproportionately are the victims of these drugs, if we will. Something that we need to think about, something that we need to talk about, something that we must not, any circumstances at all, be encouraged through trickery and et cetera to dismiss it as something that, quote unquote, will be handled later on. We in the African American community don't have, quote unquote, later on as it pertains to these afflictions, if you will, that are pounding our community, pounding our future, and pounding the right of survival. That's right. Survival is a right. African American has earned that right. We must insist that these rights that are important to our survival as a species, as a race, as a human being, and et cetera, be properly addressed. But for some reason or another, we are being slighted. We are being ignored. We are not, quote unquote, seeing the kind of concern that should be expressed. Now, that takes us all the way back to the death of a 19-year-old African-American young lady just a couple of nights ago. What were the circumstances that caused young people to engage in a gun battle? By the way, she, the 19-year-old victim, was not a participant. Unfortunately, she happened to be in the way, if you understand what we're saying. It is important that we insist, not begging, we're not here to beg, that we insist that hard, consistent, appropriate, and meaningful discussions take place. You know, my friends, I don't know how many of you listening tonight are concerned or interested. Again, what we said just a minute ago, the right of survival is a guarantee, and we must insist as the sons and daughters of the African that we be given and extended the same consideration, the same concern, if you will, as any other race or group of people in these, the United States of America. All of this takes us then back to the violence that is going on in our streets, both male and female. Far too many. In fact, there is too much anger in our community. I'm not sure that we have the necessary leadership or the willpower to address it, to step up, if you will, to let young people and their loved ones know that we are concerned. We refer back again to the letter written by a member of the Beeks family, a grandmother, gunned down on the streets of this city while taking, quote unquote, her grandchildren, siblings, to a meeting to be with other friends and loved ones. I'm just not sure that we are feeling the sense of outrage about what is happening to our community of color, the African-American community here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. You know, we have a reputation around the United States, maybe even the world, that we are a liberal, enlightened community, if you will, that we can be expected, quote unquote, to do the right thing, to be compassionate, to be kind, to be considerate, feel a responsibility to all of the above as a part of the liberalism of the Twin Cities and of the state of Minnesota. But for those of us in the African-American community, we know that's not always true. There are far too many people who speak to the issue. I'm talking about people who are the victims, if you will. I'm not talking about people who are trying to get a grant, get some more money, live good, and ignore the problem that they said that they wanted to be compensated for because they were going to address it. This level of violence. It has been argued since February of this year that this could be one of the most dangerous and volatile and violent summers since the early 1990s. I'm not sure that we are prepared. And I repeat again that we are prepared. Over the sound of a cheering crowd here again at the Target Center in downtown Minneapolis, New York Liberty and Minnesota Lynx are tied 83-83. And, you know, that's good. I see a lot of young African-American children, male and female, particularly the young females. I'm talking about children, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, so proud and feeling to be so much a part of this championship experience, if you will. But the fact of the matter is that there is only so much that they can do, given their age and their maturity. The responsibility to make sure that their dream comes clear and factual is left to those of us who have walked the path, who know and understand what it takes for the survival of our people. And so we tonight allow young people who have a plan of action, such as the two organizations we talked about previously on this program tonight, have an opportunity to implement, to move forward, to continue to reach out to their peers, if you will. Try to turn aside this culture, this atmosphere of danger, violence, death, mayhem, and et cetera. And that those who say they have the expertise to take care of the rest of the business, if you will, to put in place the mechanism, the matrix, if you will, the grid, and to bring about some semblance of safety for our overall community, then we need to have that happen, and we need to happen as of like yesterday. We repeat again, it needed to happen like yesterday. We are really in a state of emergency. People like to pretend that that is a exaggeration, if you will, too much, quote-unquote, theatrics about what is happening and et cetera. And buy into that. We think that for a community, for people that are fighting for their survival, that are looking forward to opportunity for their children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and et cetera, that they have the right to expect that there's a plan, there's a commitment of implementation and et cetera. This violence, this driving up and down the street, gunplay and et cetera, I mean, we are making ourselves into, unfortunately, one of the many, quote-unquote, Dodge cities and Tucson and tombstones and et cetera become the hallmark and the legacy of how America thinks. We said in our column 2 weeks ago in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder that the issue of guns is never going to be dealt with in this country because this is a nation that was founded upon, quote-unquote, black power, the musket, if you will, the Remington rifle, the Remington gun. We are a nation that feels for some reason or another that we are at threat and at risk, and we must be armed to the teeth. Well, one can attempt to justify that when one continues to see the pain, the agony that some of us have seen for many, many years within our communities, be they the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, or be they Denver, or Los Angeles, South Central, if you will, Miami, New Orleans, God knows. Memphis, Tennessee, cities under siege, New York City, everyone understands the calamity that has impacted Chicago, Milwaukee, and et cetera. We can't just continue to talk about it and then go to funerals and say to people, you know, it's on your loss, if you will. You know, that's become a popular saying, like there's something kind of slick, if you will. Almost, and I'll use this specific historical reference, almost Shakespearean, You know, we are saddened. We apologize for your quote-unquote loss. It has become almost like a rite of passage, and there should never be anything that is considered to be a rite of passage to be able to just accept the norm, to walk around and say, well, that was unfortunate, too bad he died, she died, you know, they died. A friend of mine was telling me of a situation that just happened a couple of days ago in New Jersey, where a very respected undertaker and his daughter, very respected professional civil servant in a city in small city, well, not a small city, but a medium-sized city, New Jersey, where the undertaker's nephew, messing with some of this new bad drugs that has been brought into this country and saturated into our community, had gone berserk, had gone ballistic, and he had cut them to pieces. And they found me walking down I-10. For those of you that are familiar with New Jersey, those of you that are listening in from New Jersey and et cetera, you know where I-10 is at. And you probably have already read in the Newark papers and certainly Philadelphia and et cetera about this heinous crime. A young man who was so out of it with drugs and et cetera in his system that he really said he didn't remember what happened. He thought that the blood that he was drenched in as he walked down, can you imagine this, my friends? He's walking down a super highway, you know, like 94, 35, et cetera, you know, I-10. And he really has no recollection of what happened. In fact, one of the individuals who was riding with the young 19-year-old sister, Miss Brown, shot and killed in this city just a couple nights ago when he was being questioned, said to the police, man, I didn't even know no shots had been fired. I don't know if he thought that was funny, he thought that was cute, or if he was, as later has been determined, was so out of it with respect to the drugs that were in his system that he probably did not pay any attention in his quote-unquote subconscious that gunfire and shots were being fired, and that he very well possibly was one of those who was handling a gun shooting back. Things are frightening because what we're doing, we're losing our way as a community, as a nation. We're losing our young people, if you will. And if we continue to lose our young people, we're going to lose any opportunity at a future. We're going to lose everything that our foreparents and forefathers and et cetera talked about, dreamt about it, fought, died. Many of them by the millions dying while in slavery and et cetera, but talking in terms of freedom and opportunity and et cetera, all of the great names that we utter and talk about as daughters of the African have worked and have been involved in and et cetera, that somewhere or another it's now all right to turn our head and to let quote unquote them slip away from. And we just have talked about it over the last 18 minutes, slip away from the responsibility of our future. You know, too many young people out here say to us, who are supposedly more mature, more knowledgeable, more understanding, that they feel like they'd be lucky, you know, if they could live to be 25. These are 17 and 18, 14 and 15-year-old young African-Americans, male and female. That's frightening. You know, we have never been, as the sons and daughters of the African, we are not a suicidal people. And yet, you need to take a look around you. Those of you that are parents, if you will, those of you that are grandfathers and grandmothers and great uncles and et cetera, through life, has not been driven by the fact that we have no sense of importance for life. I repeat again, we are not a suicidal people, we here in Black America. And yet, I've watched for the last 7 or 8 years as far too many young men and women, to some degree, the young women less than our young men, young men are basically quick to tell you, man, you know, man, I ain't gonna live to be 20, man. You know, I'm 16 now. You know, man, I'll be lucky 21 or 22, and you indicate that, man, 25 is nothing but a dream, baby. Not gonna make it. I got to do my thing now. Certain references, certain cliches, if you will, which have become acceptable. And I'm not sure that we're able to indicate to our young people that there is actually a plan, that there is a commitment to a mission to deal with this violence that is in the streets of our city. The other night, up there by the Burger King and the McDonald's and the adjacent street where all that drug dealing is going on, two brothers shot and wounded, if you will, people say, oh, my God, they were shooting up there again. That whole area of West Broadway, nothing but a minefield, if you will. But then there are far too many streets, boulevards, if you will, that have become just that, a place where war is conducted. Instead of talking in terms of the future of life, if you will, the importance of addressing the things that makes you a better human being, folks are talking how much dope they can buy, how many guns that they can acquire, if you will, who it is that they hate, you understand, who it is that they don't want to have around them, who it is that they want to, quote, unquote, take their life. And you see that and you hear that. And in the case of some of us, it clearly must make us feel a certain significant sense, it should, of anxiety and frustration, but also of fear. Because the thing that has destroyed nations and empires and et cetera has been when they get to the place that everybody to say, yeah, man, it ain't going to make no difference. It don't make no difference. You know, I'm going to do my thing now, whatever that is. But see, my friends, tonight on this program, we're saying that that is unfair. That is unfair to the children of our communities, if you will. That is unfair, quote, unquote, to those who are the teachers. And when I talk in terms of teachers, I'm talking about those who teach the values and the importance of life, the respect for life, the expectation. See, again, what we said just a couple minutes ago, we actually pulled ourselves into a chasm, if you will. We walked to the edge of the cliff, and we are full and too comfortable with this feeling of fullness. That it's kind of okay, man, if Cat does this thing, and if Rashad and Little Man or some of them didn't make it, man, you know, yeah, that's really too bad, man, but I'm still here doing my thing. That's true. You know, that's frightening, if you will, particularly for a nation that has such wealth and such great institutions, if you will. You know, we're not a poverty-stricken nation, but within our nation, or corners of significant poverty, if you will. And you know just what I'm talking about, just where I'm coming from with regards to there can be so much of this luxury, if you will, this, the best of all lives. And then there continue to be in this country these pockets of poverty and despair, anger, if you will. I think in some respects, for the purposes of tonight's program and in remembrance of the latest victims, quote-unquote, of the violence in the streets of our city, that we've reached the point where, and we repeat it again, and we know that we're being redundant. Sometimes being redundant maybe is helpful. You know, if you say it enough times, maybe it'll register in some of these minds that are not yet clouded, quote-unquote, toxicity of what has become, quote unquote, the challenge to the African American community and our plan for survival, if you will. For those in our domestic and international audience, do not dismiss the fact that what we say on this program tonight is not something that was dreamt up just to pretend and to sell sensationalism. This is for real, my friend. And for one to be out there over the many years and to still know those that are trying to do everything they can in a positive way to stop the violence, to stop the decay, the decadence, if you will, that is gripping our community. These are voices / forces / human beings that must be listened to, must be recognized and respected. You know, we talk oftentimes on this program about one of the great tragedies that we've seen over the last couple of years is that we have no historical portfolio. I saw an article in the paper yesterday talking about being a protocol program at the University of Minnesota in which black history can be accessed, if you will. And, you know, you go online and et cetera, and you will find aspects, et cetera, of history. Well, I'd like to challenge that. You know, it's more than just the Gibbons collection. There are a lot of collections of history and et cetera in this great metropolitan area of ours. We have a lot of institutions, many of them private, some of them public, who have vast, if you will, and bundles of monies and et cetera. And then they have the most important aspect of great institutions of learning and higher knowledge and et cetera, and that is they have the documentation that talks about the many great plans going all the way back to, quote-unquote, the founding of this republic of ours and even before that. And so with all of that comprehensive knowledge and information and et cetera, one continues to ask the question, where are we lacking? What is it that we're not able to put together as it pertains to the, if you know what I'm saying? And can we, and I think wrongly so, but can we continue to convince ourselves that, you know, we got a long time and actually it'll correct itself, you know, it'll make a difference? Was that fair to Ms. Deep? Was that fair to Ms. Brown? Was that fair to others that have lost their lives just this year alone in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul? Two young men shot in the parking lot there on West Broadway, though they were not DOA, the fact that they were wounded, the violence perpetrated against them could be a life changer, if you will. No one knows how an individual will react and respond, what they will do, how they will do it, if they will seek revenge, if they will accept that there is a better life, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that we are prepared to commit ourselves. And that's another word, commitment, to commit yourself, to stand up, not only do what's right, but put your full energy into what is happening and how it is happening. These are observations of desperation, really, by a journalist, columnist, myself, man who has watched for far too many years this scenario play out, people seeming to either care or have an answer, yet I know I sit in council with those who do have a plan, a sincere plan, a plan to deal with the violence, the despair, the hatred, the anger, and et cetera. So in some regards, the mindset is there. The intellect is there. The ability to assess times one has to talk in that particular area of terminology because the intellectuals like to say that the sons and daughters of the African did not have the gift, quote-unquote, of intellectual greatness. I, of course, as a black man of 77 years reject that right out of hand, okay? You know, some of the greatest fools that I've ever seen came out of the so-called intellectual communities and institutions of this nation and across the world and had no clearer understanding when they departed than when they arrived, if you will, at life's doorstep. And so this, in the last 14 minutes of tonight's program, is an appeal, a continued appeal, that we reach out, we commit, we make the adjustments. You know, I'm quite sure 19-year-old young lady who lost her life, and I have to repeat again, every effort was made. Do you think that at any time, at point in time, that she really felt that she would only enjoy 19 years of life? I just don't think that we should think like that, that we should think that we will enjoy all aspects of what the good Lord has provided. Maybe we need more spiritual and ecumenical uplifting. I'm not sure. One thing that I know is that you don't play with God. You don't play with the Supreme Being, which is so secret and yet so important to the development and to the future of the human race. I'm just not sure. But I know I look around me tonight in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I see despair, and I see fear. I see young people, and I see older people. Really don't know if just driving down the street they're going to take a bullet, permanently injure and damage them, or take their lives. This is not good. This is not what a civilized, quote-unquote, society should come to expect or be expected to live with. We're better than that. We have, quote unquote, worked too hard as a people. We in the African American community, God knows, have worked. We have come off and out of the shackles, slavery, segregation, Jim Crowism, to what? To be burdened with this, everything from gunfire to fatal drugs and etc. No, no, my friends, tonight we are better than that in the United States of America and in our individual enclave, be they Minneapolis and St. Paul, be they Minot, North Dakota, Great Falls, Montana, or Seattle, Washington, or San Francisco, Las Vegas, Phoenix, if you will, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Abilene, Texas, San Antonio, Houston. We mentioned earlier cities like New Orleans and Memphis in the throes of violence where it now just becomes acceptable to say, oh, yeah, okay, we've had 77 homicides. I got in Chicago, it's, you know, yeah, well, we've 185, 200 have been killed already this year. We're on a record pace. We're better than that. My friends, we have to be, because if we ever reach that point in time in our lives and what we perceive as our mission, that has become acceptable, that the statistical data of mayhem, murder, injury, and et cetera is just kind of okay, we're on our way totally and absolutely out the door. It will do no good to sit in the temples of religion, ecumenical caring, pronouncements, and etc., because we've already lost faith. I like to think tonight, and I'm certainly saying that our phone lines are not open. As I said before, colleague Donald Allen is on some kind of assignment, if you will. But again, I use the term for eighth or ninth time, we're better than this. We have to be. For those of you tonight who have taken the time to listen to this program and you turn and you look at your grandchild, if you will, or your child, or your great-grandchild, God bless you. if you've enjoyed that quote, quote-unquote sequence of life, you have a right to expect something better than what is happening on the streets of our cities in this nation. I can well remember just 40 years ago, as a younger man, we termed what was happening to us as a part of the battle to end segregation, Jim Crowism, the civil rights movement, and et cetera. We thought we knew who all the enemies were. Oh, there are enemies out there that are here now that were there 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. I think some of you understand what I'm saying and how I'm putting it to you. But I don't think that we ever thought that at some point in time that it would be the same merry-go-round, because it has turned into a merry-go-round. It just continues to happen, if you will. Some are saying now in the corridors of academia and the so-called think tanks and et cetera, that the sons and daughters of the African have reached a point, as we go into the last 5 minutes of tonight's program, that we have reached a point where we have, quote-unquote, unbeknownst even to us, that psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually we have given up. God help us if that is a fact, if that is a reality, a realization, if you will. I just believe too much in the sons and daughters of the African, that we are warriors, that we are people, and the importance of not only surviving but excelling. I just still have that belief in the African-American agenda. Again, in the sons and daughters of the African. There were too many who paid the supreme price for 400 years or better to make it a better place for those who were to survive. You think about that, my friend. Decision that they're going to fight the battle, if you will, be it at Harper's Ferry or other places that are part of the historical agenda, and that they made that decision, expecting that at some point, be it 20 years, 50 years, 150, 300 years, that we would have reached a point where it was all for naught. And I just don't believe that. I believe that Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and I use them as a point of reference for modern times and et cetera, because so much of our history has been lost. And when you start talking about Soldier Under Truth, Mary McLeod Bethune, if you will, Marcus Garvey, and et cetera, people, far too many people who should not, in fact, be about doing this, look at you as if, you know, you're off your rocker. What are you talking about? What is he talking about? I think one of the saddest things in closing tonight on this program is that come January and February of 2017, as an example, there will be so many of our community, of our young people, let's say 30 and down, really have no understanding of what you're talking about when you talk about Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, when you talk about Thurgood Marshall, if you will, and then you continue to go back into the 1940s and the 30s and the 20s and the turn of that century, if you will, and you go back to the days of the Emancipation Proclamation. It is amazing how many people don't have a clue what the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863 was all about. Look at you again like they're crazy. And what happens is that those who are new arrivals in our country, be they from Somalia, Nigeria, you understand, or Romania, and Bulgaria, and Poland, and et cetera, have a tendency to speak ill of us and disrespectful of us because they don't think that we fought a battle. They really don't, my friend. The sons and daughters and the children of the African fought a battle for over 400 years. We lost millions, my friend, not only on the high seas of the North Atlantic, but quote-unquote on the plantations and in the urban settings, be it from the East Coast to the West Coast. Everywhere, that there is sacred soil. We have joined our red brothers and sisters, the real indigenous people of this North American continent and this enclave country of America. All of this ground has soaked up some of the blood of those of us who are the sons and daughters of the African. Tonight, as you think, unfortunately, about the next victim, we'd like to say that there will be no more victims, that we will be able to turn the corner, that we'll be able to fight the battle, that we'll be able to save every life, and et cetera. We know deep in our hearts that it is not true. But we also should know in our hearts that we have not given up. 3-year-old daughter, or your 5-year-old granddaughter or grandson, and et cetera, and you look in those big, beautiful brown eyes, if you will, you have to have a tinge that runs through every fiber of your body that says that I'm going to do everything that I can to protect this precious life. That is a part of me. See, we tend to forget every time we lose a loved one, we lose a little bit of ourselves. And again, that is just not even a sense of anger, but controlled anger, an anger that will make us facilitate a plan of et cetera. For us to ignore and et cetera means that we have conceded defeat upon our house. And I just don't believe that the sons and daughters of the African and the rich history that we brought to these shores to join with the hands of our red brothers and sisters, that we're prepared to do that. May God continue to have his hand upon the shoulders of people of color, particularly the red and the black. Good Lord will continue to give us strength to stand tall and to preserve, and this is most important, to preserve the dreams, the thoughts, the ambitions, the desires, and the sense of mission and purpose of those who came before us and those that will take the journey long after we are gone. God bless you, Black Minnesota. Continue to stay strong, stay vigilant, and continue the battle. This is Ron Edwards, Don and Ron program. Thank you for being with us and listening and sharing our observations and thoughts. Again, God bless Black Minnesota. Good night.